What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, what's up, everyone? I hope everyone's doing well on this fine Saturday morning. Before we get started on anything, I'd like to apologize for not putting out a weekly Kaiju Havoc this past Wednesday. I worked kind of late, and so I got home kind of late. Normally, I'm home at anywhere from 5:30 to 5:45. I didn't actually get to the house until close to 7, and Emily was already home, and she was in the process of cooking dinner, and, you know, like, my friend Ian, who has guested on the podcast before, he called me. He wanted to talk to me about a few things, because I don't know if I've let you guys know. Ian is going to be marrying Emily and I. So he's our, I don't know what you would call that, the officiator, I suppose. yeah, so he's the one. We had it planned out to where one of Emily's friends was going to do it. And then very last minute, Ian was just going to be a groomsman for me. And very last minute, the person that Emily had chosen to be the officiator had to drop out due to overscheduling, and accepted our thing, not realizing that she had already accepted another thing on the same weekend. And so we had to scramble to find, I did talk about this on the podcast, I believe. And so, you know, asked my buddy Ian, because he is ordained. I'm ordained, but I can't marry myself, you know, but you know, so asked him, he said yes, and so we've been trying to get all kinds of stuff lined out and everything. We've been having scheduling issues with trying to get the marriage license and all that kind of junk. But today, at the time of this recording, is April 1st. I'm not going to do any April Fool's jokes. I do not partake in April Fool's. So not going to be dropping any kind of tidbits of information or anything like that, and then be like, ha, gotcha, you know, and all that kind of, that's just not me. I don't mess with all that. But, yeah, so, yeah, April 1st, I'm officially getting married this month, y'all. Like, that's, that's something, you know, even just like 4 years ago, because I've been with Emily about 3.5, but even just like 4 years ago, if anyone had told me, like, you're going to be getting married in a few years, I wouldn't have believed them. I've always been, I'm never going to get married. I don't see the point in getting married and this and that. Like, if you're going to be together, just be together, you know, and all that kind of stuff. No need to bring the government and legalities into all this and all that kind of mess. And then, you know, got with Emily and was with her for a pretty good bit. And, you know, it was just, I don't know. It was just something about it. I was like, you know, I don't want to just be with you. I want to marry you and, you know, make you my wife and you make me your husband. And so that's what we're doing. And it is fast approaching. You know, I'm not nervous. I'm excited. I'm excited to finally be able to, you know, say I do and marry, my best friend in the whole wide world. I don't think she's nervous, but she's stressed, you know, and like the closer the day comes, the more she starts spazzing out about things and all that kind of stuff. But that's to be expected. And I try to help her when I can and where I can and all of that kind of stuff. And I think I've talked to you guys about this before. You know, I'm not trying to sound sexist. I'm really not. I'm just saying this kind of, you know, to be funny or whatever. But, you know, in a lot of ways, she's a stereotypical woman whenever it comes to getting the wedding planned out and all that kind of stuff, because she'll, you know, she'll come up to me. She hasn't done it in a while because she pretty much saw the cycle that we were in, but, she'd come up to me and, she's like, I really wish you would be more involved with the wedding. So I'd say, okay, well, give me something to do and I'll do it. You know, well, I want you to handle this and that. Okay. I got it. I start handling this and that. No, you're doing that wrong. No, I don't want it done that way. No, I would prefer it to be done this way. No, why are you making that decision, you know, and all that? Just tell me what you want me to do, my love. So, okay, I'm taking these back. I want you to work on this instead. Okay, I start you know, trying to handle that. No, you're not doing that right. No, no, nope. I don't want it done that way. No, I don't like that color. No, I don't like that design. No, no, no. And everything. And so after a while, you know, I'm just like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? And then she would go, you know what? I'll just handle it all on my own. I'll just do it the way that I want it done. Okay, babe, do your thing. And then about a week goes by, and then I hear, you know, I really wish you would be more involved with the wedding. You know, and the cycle would just continue until finally I made some kind of comment after that, after about the third time that happened or whatever. And I was like, you know, I kind of jokingly was like, okay, what, you're going to give me like two or three things to do, say I'm doing it wrong, and then take it back anyway? I said, so when can I book you for the next appointment next week to want me to be more involved with the wedding, even though you're going to take it away from me anyway? And she kind of like, you know, started laughing, and she's like, yeah, I know. She's like, I just want it done. I want it to be perfect and all that. And I was like, I get it. You know, though, women are far more into, like, she's so much more into this than I am, you know, I mean, like, and that's just generally how marriages go between the bride and the groom. You know, the bride is just all about everything needs to be so-so and everything needs to be perfect and all that. And then you look at me and I'm just like, I can go down to the courthouse tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need all this stuff and everything. But, you know, and in a lot of ways, even though it is our wedding, it's really her wedding, and I'm aware of that. I've come to terms with that and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, if there's one thing in our life that I'm going to 100% like, we're going to do this the way you want to do it, the way it needs to be done, the way you want it to be done, like, it's gonna happen. And so that's just what we're going with and everything. But yeah, I know I kind of straight off course there, but yeah, my friend Ian called me Wednesday night just to go over some of the details and all that kind of stuff for the wedding. And you know, it came after I got off the phone with him and dinner wasn't far from being done and all that. I just kind of sat there, and you know, it became crunch time. It's about 7:30 at this point, and I'm just, or 7:45, something like that. And so I was just like, am I doing an episode tonight? No, I don't think I am. And so I was just like, okay, well, we'll just going ahead and skip tonight and all of that. And I'm really, one of the things, don't get me wrong, I love her to death. I can't wait to marry her and all that. But there's so much a part of me that cannot wait to get all this wedding stuff over, just so life can kind of go back to being normal for a little while. Because, you know, I'm just ready for it. I'm just ready for it to be over with and all of that kind of stuff. But anywho, with all of that said and done, it's time to move on to today's episode. I've got a review to do, a review of a movie that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. It is it's a movie made in Thailand. It was done by Hollywood Thailand, and it is called The Lake, and it came out last year in 2022. Now, whenever I first saw the trailer for this movie, naturally, I was very, very hyped. I was very, very excited. I know I've talked about on this, on the podcast before and everything, that I feel like the whole world, as far as movies are concerned, we're kind of experiencing another kaiju boom. You know, I mean, there for a while, like, you know, there was a massive kaiju boom in, like, the 60s to like the early 80s or something like that. And then the 80s pretty much took over with just, you know, thanks to the success of Jaws. It wasn't necessarily kaiju films. It was just films concerning like an abnormally large, normal animal or something like that. You know, you had Jaws and its numerous sequels. You have films like Alligator and then Alligator 2 that came out much, much later and all that. You know, Piranha, you had Orca, you know, I mean, like, you had, and then, like, you know, you had Grizzly 2, like, you know, it kind of moved away from kaiju and into, like I said, just abnormally large or aggressive normal animals and all of that. And then that kind of stuff kind of stopped, not really stopped, but slowed down. Then in the 90s, we kind of had, it was, I don't want to really call it a kaiju boom, but we had an entire slew of very cheaply made sci-fi original movies that dealt with giant monsters. So at the end of the day, you could call them kaiju movies. They're just terrible B-minus kaiju movies. I'm talking about things like Komodo and Cobra and Komodo versus Boa, you know, like and things like that. And that pretty much took over in like the late 90s or mid to late 90s and into the 2000s. And then Pacific Rim came along and knocked it out of the park. You guys know I love Pacific Rim. And just knocked it out of the park. The following year, we got the Godzilla reboot of the start of the MonsterVerse. That franchise, you know, started going and has been going for a good while now. And, you know, I don't know. It's like studios around the world are starting to see, like, oh, well, there's something to these giant monsters. Like, let's see if we can shell out some of these. And so we're getting, I have a number of, I don't want to call them kaiju movies, but they are giant monster movies, but they're Chinese films. I find them in like the $5 to $10 section at Walmart and all of that. And so I've been getting a number of those here lately. This film from Thailand. We have a number of films that's going to be coming out from Japan, some of them short films, some of them like full feature-length films and all of that kind of stuff. So Japan's shelling stuff out. We're starting to get some like lots of kaiju media, like comic books, books, novels, behind the scenes making of certain movies and stuff like that. So we are pretty much experiencing another kaiju boom. And I'm all about it. I'm all for it. Like I mean, I hope this lasts for a good while, that we continue just to see kaiju films being thrown out from multiple studios from all over the world to see different cultures take on, like, you know, giant monster films and all that kind of stuff. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And so, whenever I found out that this film was being made and it was going to be made in Thailand, I was like, okay, I don't think I've ever seen. I mean, what's the shortened version of that? Just Thai? Like, I don't think I've ever seen a Thai kaiju film before. And so I'm like, okay, this could be kind of interesting and all that. And I honestly don't know off the top of my head if I'd ever even watched a Thai film. I'm sure I have, to be honest with you. It's one of those things, it's just escaping me at this point. But I'm sure I've seen, like, you know, some martial arts films or something like that, because I do watch a good chunk of martial arts films. So I'm sure I've seen some from there. But I was pumped, I was excited. I remember watching the trailer for the first time and was like, oh yeah, like I'm definitely gonna be into this, definitely looking forward to it. Looked like a giant monster film, mixed with horror elements and all of that kind of stuff. And so yeah, I was pumped, I was ready. And so the film finally got released here in the States. I believe it's only available digitally right now. I've seen a number of people that's reviewed it on YouTube and all of that, talk about how they watched it on iTunes. I believe it's available on Amazon Prime right now. But for you voodoo guys, I'm Team Voodoo. I have a big digital library of films, like 400 movies or something like that, on my Vudu. And I was just scrolling through the weekly deals one day and I saw The Lake. And I was like, hot dog, I didn't know that it was on Vudu. And so I went on ahead and purchased it. It was nine, it was no, because it was on sale, so I think it was $7.99 whenever I bought it. So it's probably about $9.99 or $12.99 whenever it's not on sale. So if you have a Vudu and you're into purchasing slash renting your movies digitally and all that kind of stuff, I know for a fact it's on there because I have it. As far as the other streaming apps go, I'm not sure. But I'm a big fan of if I'm going to review a film or something like that, you guys know I want to watch it for like whenever I do the review, I want it to be very close to me watching it for the first time. And so my schedule, I already had like a number of films that I was planning on doing, and so whenever I purchased it, I was just kind of like, I can't watch it yet because I didn't want to watch it, have my initial feelings of it and all of that kind of stuff, and then go about a month down the road, okay, I'm going to review this movie, and then can't remember what I initially thought about the film, would rewatch it and all of that kind of stuff, and maybe didn't pick up on certain things like I did the first time and all that kind of stuff. So I held off on watching it until at the time of this recording. I'm recording today. I watched the film for the first time yesterday. And I can tell you, before I jump into the review or anything, I really, really enjoyed this movie. Is it anything to write home about? Quite frankly, no. Like, it's not, like back whenever I worked offshore or something like that, if I was in my little bunk on the boat and I watched the lake or something like that, I wouldn't see like me coming home and just being like, oh my God, I watched an amazing movie while I was out there in the Gulf, it's not that good, but it is enjoyable upon my first watch. I'm pretty sure I would enjoy it upon a second watch, and I'm gonna get into the reasons as to why, for the review and all that. But yeah, I enjoyed it immensely. It's not that long of a film. It's only about an hour and a half. And I watched the it's in its native language with the English subtitles. I have heard that the dubbed version of the film is not that good. Like, the dialogue isn't all that good, that the voice actors that did the dialogue didn't do the best job and all that kind of stuff. But to me, whenever I watch movies like this, I prefer to watch them in their native language with the subtitles. So I wasn't looking for a dubbed version of it and all of that. But yeah, so I watched the sub version. I very much enjoyed it. It was pretty good. And ever since I finished it, I've been scouring the internet seeing if I can find merchandise for it, if there's a figure of the monster or anything like that. Like, I mean, because I like the film. I really do. And I would like to see some merchandise for the film come out in the future. So, with all of that said, let's get into the review. And at the end of the review, I'm going to give my rating out of 5 stars. I'm going to do this just like I did with Shin Ultraman. I'm going to cover the things that I liked. I'm going to cover the things that I didn't like. And, then I'll just do a wrap up and then I will give my rating. So, all right. Let's talk about what I liked about the film first. And also, let's just go on ahead and throw this out there. Spoiler alert. Like, I'm going to try my best not to talk about certain things in the movie, like full breakdowns of scene by scene. But there are some things I'm going to talk about that could be viewed as spoilers and all of that. So the spoiler alert is in effect starting now. So if you want to watch this movie for the first time without having any type of spoilers or anything like that, turn this episode off, get online, watch the film, come back, finish the episode. Simple as that. So, spoiler alert. Now, what I liked about the movie, I think the top thing that most people would look at whenever you're watching a monster film or a kaiju film or something like that is what the monster looked like. I love the monster design. I really, really, really like the monster design. Upon seeing like a full body shot of the monster, I really got vibes from the Ymir from 20 Million Miles to Earth, the Ray Harryhausen film. Like, very, very similar in design to that, but then I would also say it's a good combination of the monster from The Host, like the fish-looking monster and all that. So basically take Ymir and the fish monster from The Host, kind of slap those two monsters together. That's basically what you got here. And they made it work. It looks good. I really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, I really much dig the monster design. Another thing that I liked, something I was not expecting, the CGI. Because this is a low-budget film. And a lot of times whenever you're watching a low-budget film, especially low-budget foreign films, for the United States listeners here, like, the special effects just usually isn't up to par with, you know, Hollywood movies and things like that. But now, mind you, this was done by Hollywood Thailand, so I don't know if they just had more sway to put more money in the budget for the special effects, or if they had just some better-than-average special effects artists working on the CGI for this film or something. But the CGI is really, really good. It's a little spotty in some areas. Like, I would kind of notice something and be like, that's a little under quality from what it was for the rest of the movie or something like that. But overall, I really liked the CGI. I was surprised to find that the CGI was as good as it was, to be honest with you. I think the CGI for the monster in this film was better than the CGI for the kaiju in Shin Ultraman, for example. Like, I was very, very surprised with how good the CGI was. Another thing I liked is, and I'm going to emphasize on this first word because I'm going to talk about it a little bit in the what I didn't like about it as well. Some practical effects for the movie. The vast majority of the monster that we see is done with practical effects. And whenever we have like full body shots or whenever it's going to run or something like that, then it swaps over to CGI. But whenever a vast majority of it that we see with its arms, with its legs, primarily with its head, is practical effects. They built a prop that was, you know, a working mechanical prop, and it looked good, it looked great, and all of that kind of stuff. Now, with that said, you know what? You know, I'm going to save that for the didn't like part. So I'll get to that later on. So a lot of the practical effects, I'd say roughly 80% of the practical effects looked really good for the movie. The screen time for the monster, I really liked it. There is not a whole lot of scenes that go on in this movie where the monster is not in the scene, or you know he's about to get into the scene. Like, so the screen time, I was very surprised with the amount of screen time that the monster got in this movie. If, let me think here. Okay, so you guys know, like, in 2014, the Godzilla film, like, Godzilla has a very small amount of screen time. I'm talking, like, it's like a two-hour movie, and he has, like, maybe, I can't remember what it was. It was low. It was very low. Like 6 minutes of screen time or something. And that's in a 2 hour movie. In this hour and a half movie, I would be comfortable in saying that the monster has probably anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes of screen time. Like, and that's just while it's on the screen. That's not counting like all the chaos and stuff going on around with the human characters when you don't even see the monster. So the monster had plenty of screen time, and I was very cool with that. Another thing that I really liked about the movie was, quite frankly, just the overall feel of the movie. Like, it starts out, like, the action pretty much starts nearly immediately, setting up for what this monster is going to be like and what it's going to be doing in the film. And then there's like maybe 10, 15 minutes of just trying to introduce some characters, get you to know some of the characters and all that, and then boom, the monster is there. And the action is going on, and the whole rest of the movie is like, it's an entire sense of urgency that everyone has trying to figure out what the monster is, how they're going to deal with it, when is it going to strike next, where is it going to strike next. Like, while I was watching the film, like, I was so engrossed in it, just watching it and enjoying myself, that I was like, man, how much longer does this movie have? And like I said, it's like an hour and a half on my Vudu. It says it's an hour and 33 minutes. And obviously that includes credits and all of that kind of stuff. So an hour and 33 minutes without the credits, we're looking at maybe an hour and 27 minutes or something like that. And I felt like I had not been watching the movie long at all. And like hit my remote just to see how much time was left. And I was at like the hour and 10 minute mark. And I remember sitting there thinking like, dang, man, this movie's almost over. Like, you know, and I didn't want it to end. I really, really enjoyed it and all that. And so the overall feel of the film and being able to pull you in and keep you interested in what's going on and when the monster is going to strike and where it's going to strike and all of that. Like, I thought that they did that very, very well. Mind you, with all of that said, art is subjective, and something that I find that I'm almost 100% focused on and enjoying and all that, the next guy might come around and be like, you know what, I thought that was one of the most boring movies ever. The only good parts was when the monster was in it and all that kind of stuff. I get it. I understand. You know, like I've talked about numerous times, I'm on the hater side for Shin Ultraman, and there's a lot of people that love Shin Ultraman. And on the flip side, I'm on the love side for Shin Godzilla, and I've spoken to a lot of people that are on the hate side. Like, it just, it happens, you know, as like art is subjective. And so I do just want to say that everything that I'm saying about this film is my own personal opinion, and you may have an entirely different opinion about the film whenever you watch it, and that's perfectly fine. It happens. But the overall feel for the film was great. It's fantastic. I really just sat here and was like, man, what's going to happen next? And like, when's the monster going to show up next and all of that kind of stuff. And then the last thing I will mention for what I liked about the movie is that they seemingly, if they're wanting to go this route, they seemingly left it wide open for a sequel, which I really, really hope that a sequel happens. I really, really do. And I hope that they put as much care and thought into the sequel as they did with this one and all of that. And hopefully, when now that the movie is out and more people are watching it and all of that kind of stuff, I really hope that they are able to hear some of the criticisms, some of the shortcomings and all that, correct them, and make us a bigger and better movie. So, oh, I'm sorry. I've got a few other. I'm sorry. I forgot. I had written up here in the top corner of my notebook some other things that I wanted to talk about. There's some tragedy in this movie. There's some sad moments. And, you know, a lot of times with kaiju movies, especially modern kaiju films, like, they can be kind of fun for the whole family and all that kind of stuff. They kind of leave out a lot of tragic elements and things like that. But this one, like, it has a few tragic moments, and there's some things that happened, you know, the characters talk about that's happened to them before and all of that. And it's like, oh wow, you know, like, you're just kind of taken aback by the sheer amount of tragedy that so much of these characters have gone through and that they somewhat go through with this film and all of that. And so I really liked that. And last but not least, the kill count. A lot of people die in this movie. Like, the monster wrecks some people. I mean, wrecks them. With that said, if you were wanting to let your kid, your young kid, watch this movie or something like that, don't let the kill count intimidate you. A lot of the kills is just simply, like, the monster swings its tail and hits somebody and they, bloop, you know, drop down. They're gone. Not a whole lot of blood, not a whole lot of gore, You know, you don't see people getting ripped up and ripped apart and all of that kind of stuff. You don't really see people getting eaten alive or anything like that. It's just like whenever the monster really goes to start attacking and all of that. You know, you see like a lot of arm swings and leg swings, like I said, hitting some people and they're down and they're obvious, you know that they're dead because like later on the characters will be talking about how the monster essentially massacred an entire village, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. So the kill count was surprisingly high. And I dig that. You know, I like watching kaiju movies that give like a sense of realism whenever it comes to that kind of stuff. One of my biggest things to where it's like, I'm not using this as an opportunity just to, compare one to the other or something like that and just to badmouth one, but you guys know I'm a Zack Snyder fan and I'm also a Superman fan and I really enjoyed Man of Steel. Part of the reason I enjoyed Man of Steel so much was because of the realism that it brought to the fight whenever the Kryptonians came to Earth and they're fighting Superman and all of that. Not only did I think the visuals looked good and all that, but I liked the fact that everything was getting wrecked. Because I'm like, you're never going to convince me. Like, this isn't like. I'm glad he put a sense of realism in that movie because, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of watching comic book movies and there's this big, giant battle going on and all of that kind of stuff. And literally everyone is just kind of like, no, we're okay. Everything's fine, you know, very small casualty list and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. No. These are literally like they are gods to us, as Jor-El put it. At the beginning of Man of Steel, whenever his mom said they'll kill him, and he said, "How? He'll be a god to them." That's what the Kryptonians were. And whenever they came here and they're trying to terraform the Earth and all of that kind of stuff, and you're seeing the buildings just getting wrecked, the other Kryptonians, you know, the battle in Smallville, the battle in Metropolis, and all of that. Then whenever it's down to just Superman and Zod and all of that kind of stuff, and they're just battling. Being slammed through buildings and all that. And you know, one of the big criticisms was why didn't Superman try to take the fight away from the populated area and this and that? He took Zod into outer space. Zod brought him back. Like, that's not a valid criticism of the movie. Like, you know, in Smallville, whenever the Smallville battle was going on and all of that, he grabbed one of the Kryptonians and tried to fly away with it to get away from the city. They drug him back down. They intentionally were trying to keep the fight right there because they knew he cared about the people and they were trying to exploit that weakness. It's not hard to figure out, people. It's really not. Like, but, I loved Man of Steel because it had that realism in there. And so many people would sit there and complain and be like, Superman wouldn't do that and all that kind of stuff. Like, no, well, this isn't your grandfather's Superman. Okay? It's perfectly fine for Superman to evolve as a character. And I believe that he did evolve as a character. And to where we got to see a little bit more of a darker side and a more realistic side of Superman and what could really happen if people like him came to Earth and there was a battle. We got to see a bit of the aftermath in the sequel to Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice. Okay? Like, the beginning part was the Battle of Metropolis, essentially through Batman's perspective. And we see all the buildings collapsing. We see people that he knows and that he loves getting killed and, you know, caught in the crossfire and all of that kind of stuff. He consoled a little girl whose parents were obviously killed during the battle and all of that kind of stuff. And then talked about how even Congress was trying to like come at Superman and all that. So because of all the damage and the destruction and just everything that happened, I love realism like that being brought to my movies. Now, on the flip side, we're going to talk about Marvel's The Avengers, the original one, the first one. Not a fan of that movie. I've not been a fan of that movie since it came out. It's a little too cartoony. It's a little too Disney-fied. It's a little too, you know, I don't like it. I've never liked it. And one of the things that I do not care for the movie is while I think visually the final battle in New York when they're fighting off the invading force and all of that kind of stuff. Well, I think it's a good scene, and I think it's a good battle, and I do rewatch it from time to time. It's just not realistic. To just sit there and, like, you have this entire alien invading force coming through this wormhole, and you literally have just a handful of heroes, and they're able to virtually make it to where there is hardly no, I mean, you can't even hardly mention casualties. To the point to where it was so not such a big deal of the battle and everything that after the fight was over, they'd just go to a restaurant to eat. You know, and I'm just like, that's a little too comic booky. I don't care for that, you know? And so I like for there to be tragedy. I like for there to be realism and all of that. And so the kill count in this movie was just like, to have this monster just going through there and just wrecking people and all of that, it was fantastic, to be honest with you. It's a very good, you know, like in the 2014 Godzilla film, you know, like there was a lot of destruction. The buildings were being torn down and ripped apart and all of that kind of stuff. But part of the movie that kind of just always takes me away, and I'm just like, really? You had to put that in there? Was after the battle is over and Godzilla is leaving the city and he's going back into the water and the people are applauding him. And all I could do is sit there and think, like, come on, guys. Yeah, he was up there fighting these other kaiju and all that, but Godzilla was also very responsible for a lot of damage to San Francisco. Like, we got to see that in the opening scene of 2019, that there are, you know, people had loss, people had tragedy, and I did like that they brought that into 2019's King of the Monsters. So, that pretty much covers it for everything that I really liked about the movie that's worth mentioning. Now, let's talk about some of the things that I didn't like, and yes, some of this kind of stuff is going to be a little nitpicky, if I'm being totally honest with you, but yeah, it is what it is. Here we go. The editing. The editing for the movie, it's all over the place at times. I believe that, this is really where some of the spoilers are going to start. So there's a scene towards the beginning of the movie where the monster drags somebody underwater. And you see the monster swimming towards him in the water, okay? You see the monster coming. Then it swaps over to practical effects, which I didn't have much of an issue with or something like that. And you see it grab the guy, and there's some thrashing going on. The camera pans over to his sister in the film. She's screaming for his name and all of that. And then when it very, 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 very quickly goes back to the attack, you literally just see the actor, like, dunk himself under the water. There's no other, like, really ripples. You don't see any type of practical effect or CGI or anything like that of the monster. It's like you just see him, like, just dunk himself under the water. And, you know, you can't help but sit there and think, maybe if you're trying to portray a guy being attacked by a monster, you don't show the monster attacking him, and then in the very next thing is like there's literally nothing going on in the water, and he just kind of bloop, kind of just dunks down. Like, you know, and another thing, like, with the editing kind of being all over the place, it's like to try and give the monster as much screen time as possible. They just kind of threw scenes in there showing the monster that literally doesn't really go anywhere. Like, there would be an attack, okay? So let's say there was the big attack in the village where it virtually wipes out the village. Then you see them in the city. The police are trying to find out what's going on. Everyone's getting medical care and all that. And then out of nowhere, it swaps back over to another scene of this person that's just doing something. Looks up. Oh, there's the monster. The monster is roaring at the person. And the guy is just like, ah, you know, and screams, and then it just goes away and goes back to, like, you know, the main characters being, like, getting checked out by the hospital staff and all that. the scene that was done, like with the monster, it's only like maybe 10 to 15 seconds long. And I would just kind of be like, well, that kind of came out of nowhere, you know, and that happens multiple times in the movie. And I know, like, it could be said that they're trying to show that the monster is slowly making its way towards the city. And so they're just kind of sprinkling in like its journey here and there. But I don't know. It kind of seemed off to me. As far as the camera work goes, there's a lot of shaky cam in this movie. There's some people that's into shaky cam. And if you don't know what shaky cam is, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's whenever there's some kind of action sequence going on, whoever's holding the camera just starts shaking it slightly just to make it to kind of obscure the vision of the viewer a little bit, to make it seem like it's a little bit more crazy than what it actually is. Some directors go overboard with it. This one kind of went overboard with it and with some of the action. Like, it would be, the camera would be shaking so much, it's just like, okay, like you would sit there and just be, you feel like your brain is rattling in your head. But, you know, like I said, it's nitpicky, but whatever. Now, this was obviously a low budget movie. I'm not knocking it for being a low budget movie. I'm really not. I think what they invested a lot of their money into was the CGI for the monster when they would go to show it run or swimming through the water or something like that. Like, a pretty good chunk of the budget went into that, I would imagine. Because there are other parts of the movies as far as like the practical effects. Remember, I talked about the practical effects a little while ago, that there were some, I said some practical effects I liked and some I didn't like. Now I'm going to talk about the ones that I didn't like. To give you a good comparison, the monster shows up, okay, and attacks. There's some people in some vehicles and all of that, and the scene was virtually done almost entirely with practical effects showing the monster. We got to see special effect like CGI whenever it kind of first walks up, whenever it goes to run away. You know, we saw that. But during like the entire time that the actual attack was going on, it was nothing but practical effects. And you can tell that it was a very well-made prop. It was a huge prop. Probably bigger than the T-Rex prop from the original Jurassic Park, but I'm going to use Jurassic Park as an example. To where, with the attack that's going on, and this happened numerous times in the movie, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit because you know, like, that they had shortcomings with the prop, obviously, because it was extremely stationary. Like, it would not move. Like, you know, I mean, and I know it's very difficult to get a prop of that size to move. You know, mostly, like, Hollywood uses, like, tracks to be able to move a prop from side to side and all of that kind of stuff and everything. But you could tell that with this movie, like, they were trying to work around it. Like, you would, like, one of the characters would, like, hear the monster coming. The camera is on their face or something. And you see their head moving. And you can hear the thump, thump, you know, like its footprints, its footsteps and all of that kind of stuff. And then whenever it would show the monster again, the monster is directly in front of him. But it just, in a lot of ways for the movie, it worked. In some ways it didn't. And here's the example that I'm going to give, just to give you an idea of what this scene would look like. Okay, let's look at the original Jurassic Park. Let's go to the scene where Rexy is going to escape from her paddock, okay? The first time we see Rexy, it's practical effects. She's eating the goat. Then imagine that we see the electrical fence, the wires getting pulled back, getting ripped apart and all of that. But then imagine that the scene of showing her stepping out of the paddock for the first time, kind of looking both ways, giving that triumphant roar and all of that kind of stuff. The scene of her seeing the light from the kids and walking towards the light. Pretend all of that is out of that scene. So basically how this film would, how that scene would play out is kind of how it plays out in the lake a time or two, is just imagine we see Rexy for the first time. She eats the goat, kind of looks over towards the car, but then just imagine we hear the wires being pulled back. We hear Rexy's footsteps, and then the very next thing that we see is Rexy is right next to the car, right whenever Tim goes to close the door. That's kind of how it plays out in the lake a lot of times. But like I said, it was low budget. You know, they had some shortcomings here and there. They obviously poured a good chunk of money into the CGI. So I can't knock them. There were just some, like there's a chase scene at one point. Like one character gets in a vehicle and is like driving away. And you can tell that whenever they were shooting the scene, they couldn't pour a whole lot of money into. There's one scene that's like an overhead shot showing a CGI monster chasing the vehicle. But they couldn't do that a lot just because of the budget. And so there's a scene where like it's painfully obvious that the car is not moving. It's just sitting there. And to see the monster, like to give you the idea that the monster is chasing it and how close it is they literally look in the side mirrors of the vehicle and you see the monster kind of there just roaring, but they didn't do a good job of making the monster look like it was in motion, so it literally just looks like it's just standing there roaring when they're supposed to be trying to portray this is a chase scene. Like, this dude is running away from the monster in a vehicle. You know, again, nitpicky, but it is what it is. There's some scenes with eggs. The monster has eggs. And numerous eggs pop up in this movie. They never really go anywhere. Like, you'll see somebody find an egg and be like, oh, what's this? Oh, it's an egg. And then that's it. You don't see that particular egg again. You don't see the characters interact with an egg again. There's one character that really interacts with an egg that we get to see, and the monster comes for the egg and all of that kind of stuff, and that's during that attack scene with the with the car and all of that kind of stuff. Like, so, but a lot of it we keep seeing eggs that's in the most random places, and I assume they're multiple eggs because we never see multiple ones in the same place, but they keep appearing in different places, so I assume they're multiple eggs, but we never really get to see, like, what, so the monster is a mom that doesn't really have a nest, she just kind of drops an egg where she feels like it, it just didn't really seem to go anywhere. And then one other thing that I'm going to complain about, and it's not necessarily a complaint, it's not necessarily a dislike kind of thing, because they were really just mediocre, the characters. The main characters that they chose for the film, we pretty much follow three different sets of characters. Okay, we follow a very small family, like a brother and sister, or a brother and two sisters. Then we follow, like, just a random cop or a detective and his daughter. And then, like, the overall police force commander that also interacts with the detective here and there and all of that. But I liked the detective. Like, I liked him. I thought that the actor did really good in the role that he had and all of that. And he particularly goes through some tragic stuff in the film. So I liked him. As far as the other ones are concerned, I didn't dislike them, but I didn't really like them either. They were interesting enough to where whenever they were on screen, I wasn't bored. And I could sit there and be like, okay, like, you know, what's going on with these people? But I was in no hurry to really see how their story was going to conclude. You know what I mean? So, like I said, it's not necessarily something that I didn't like about the movie, but I didn't necessarily like it either. So instead of saying that as far as the characters go, putting them in the didn't like category, I'll put them in the this was just mediocre about the film category. And I think I might start doing that in the future, talking about what I liked, what I didn't like, and then what I found just simply be mediocre or something like that. So, the last thing that I'm going to talk about, and this is kind of a big spoiler for the film. You watch the initial trailer for the film, you really think it's going to be about a giant monster, and it's just going to be that monster in particular. But whenever you start watching the film opens up and we see that monster. We see the big one. That's the mom, the one that has the eggs and everything. The vast majority of the film focuses on a different monster. That is the child of Mama Monster. And it's almost entirely, I'd say 95% done with practical effects and suitmation. And that's the monster that the vast majority of the film is about. And then at the towards the end of the movie, when there's maybe about 20 minutes left in the film, they capture that monster. And then that's whenever the mom comes out because she can hear it crying and, in need of help and all of that. And so she's like, okay, I'm coming to save my baby. And then she pops up again. So, like, I wouldn't. It doesn't take away from the movie. I just hate whenever trailers do that. I hate whenever you go to watch a movie, and I know that they don't want to give away everything in the trailer, but I cannot stand whenever you watch a trailer and they give you this premise of what's going on and all of that kind of stuff, and it really makes you think, like, oh, there's this giant monster that comes out of the lake and is rampaging around and destroying all this kind of stuff. Cool, let's watch it. And then you watch the movie, and it's like, nope, it's its baby that's not mentioned or shown or anything in the trailers. And the big mama monster gets a severe amount of less screen time than the baby monster, in my opinion. Well, they probably get about half, if I'm being honest with you. The mama monster really starts getting a lot of screen time at the end of the film. But yeah, that's just me. So. Overall, like I said, I really enjoyed the movie. The things I didn't like about it, I'm aware they're nitpicky. It's just, you notice certain things and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't even really want to say I didn't like these things about the movie. It was just like they were noticeable. Let's say it like that. Because there's not a whole lot about the film that I would actually say I flat out did not like. Like, oh, I wish they would have done that different, or, something like that. But overall, out of 5 stars, I try not to do half stars. So out of 5 stars, it's a solid 3. If I did half stars, I think I'd give it a 3.5. Can't really give it a 4 just because of its shortcomings with like the budget and, the editing process and all of that kind of stuff, but I think a solid 3 is a good ranking for the movie. It's definitely worth a single watch. So if you have not seen The Lake yet, go check it out. Check your streaming apps. See what you want to watch it on and all of that kind of stuff. If you don't have Vudu, Vudu is free. So just download it. You can set up an account and all of that kind of stuff. And then you can buy and rent movies on Vudu. And also, Vudu is for, like, whenever you buy a movie and it comes in with a digital code, you enter that code in Vudu, and then you have that movie digitally, and you can hook Vudu up to your laptop, to your phone, to your tablet, whatever, to where, like, whenever, if you're big into buying physical media and you buy the Blu-ray and it comes with a digital copy, well, then if you're, traveling somewhere or something like that, just sitting in the car and you're bored, if you have Vudu on your phone, you can just yank out your phone, plug in your cord so your phone's charging. But you can sit there and just watch a movie on your phone as long as it's on your Vudu. Like, it's pretty cool. But, yeah, guys, that pretty much does it for my review of The Lake. Really enjoyed it. Give it a watch. There's a lot of people bad-mouthing it on IMDb. I don't understand why. Like, it currently has like a 3.4 out of 10 on IMDb. And I was shocked to see that after I watched the film. I was just like, really? That low? And I go to look at some of the user reviews, and they're basically just, oh, it's a Godzilla ripoff, or it's a Jurassic Park ripoff. Like, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Just because something is similar to something else does not automatically make it a ripoff. Like, there are billions and billions and billions of people in this world, across this entire earth. The chances of more than one person having the same idea creatively is pretty doggone high. Like, and there's going to be things that inspire people and all that. So I don't understand the people that say, well, this is a Godzilla ripoff, because it's really not that similar to Godzilla at all. I don't see hardly any comparisons to Godzilla. I don't know which Godzilla film they're talking about, but I didn't see hardly any comparisons to Godzilla. As far as Jurassic Park goes, about the only thing that I could see that they would compare it to would be the attack when there's two individuals in a car and the monster is trying to get into the car to get its egg. But I mean, is that what we've come to where anytime there's going to be a movie of a monster trying to get to some individuals in a car, that's automatically going to be a ripoff of Jurassic Park? You know, it just seems like an ignorant statement to me. It doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, I enjoyed it. Go check it out. Go watch it. I think you'll enjoy it too. Don't listen to the naysayers. Quite frankly, don't listen to me. Go in there, watch it, have an open mind. Judge it for yourself. You know, don't take the word of anybody else. This review is strictly my opinion on how I felt about the movie, and by no means am I trying to make you see the film the way I saw it or anything like that. I'm just sharing my opinion, and I hope you guys watch it, and if you enjoyed it, you know, reach out to me and let's talk about it. Let's talk about some of the things that we liked and what we didn't like and all that. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it. You know, don't really have anything lined out for this Wednesday for the weekly Kaiju Havoc, but I will say next Saturday, a week from today, I will be doing my second commentary episode on the original 1954 Gojira film. Always keep in mind, my commentary episodes are meant to be listening to my commentary while you are watching the film at the same time. So I'm going to be watching the original Japanese version, not the Americanized 1956 version. So the original, which I have on Blu-ray, it's the Criterion Collection, and I also have just a special edition two-disc DVD of it. That's actually worth a pretty penny. Whenever I first got it, I didn't think it was going to be that valuable, but it's worth some bucks. let's just put it that way. But yeah, so that's what I'm going to be doing. So I hope you guys are looking forward to that. And as always, check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, a Godzilla/King Kong podcast. I have a Godzilla Ultimate fan page. And on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal the Kaiju Guy. On YouTube, I've just very recently crossed 250 total subscribers. Thank you guys so much for anyone who subscribed to the YouTube channel and watches my content and everything. I very much appreciate it. So, alrighty, guys. Thank you all. As always, once again, you guys are the best. Wouldn't be doing this without you. This was my review of The Lake. 3 out of 5 stars. Next week, my commentary episode on the 1954 Gojira. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.